When you stand in the house, you represent those persons who send you to the House of Assembly to represent them. And when I hear members talk about rights of other members, as if to suggest there are members who are more equal in this House than others, I want them to think again about what the House of Assembly really stands for. There's no member here who's more important than the next. Everybody has the same rights in this House because we each represent one of 17 constituencies in this country. So I hear about the opposition has no rights. And people suggest that they tell the opposition members when they speak in the House. Madam Speaker, I'd like them to be informed that we all stand equal in this House. It can only stand in the Cabinet, not in this House. Mr. Member for Mikus South, you're an educator. Give me a second of what happened before. We're saying what if. What if. Madam Speaker, this is the fifth budget that has been presented by the government since the last general election of 2006. And one would be hard-pressed to find anything new in one of these budgets. Really. And I have made the point over the last four budgets, really, that this government keeps rehashing the same project every year. But I must say that there are a few, maybe I should just be concessionary to say there are a few things, maybe one or two, that has been implemented based on discussions we've had in this House. For example, I must say, I give the Prime Minister some credit by saying he introduced the CDP. Because after 4 years of me saying that there ought to be some allocation for every parliamentarian, at least he was listening. So I give him that concession. And it is important for people to recognize when people listen. Because I remember saying that we make no recommendations. I made a number of recommendations yesterday. Because throughout my budget speeches, I've always made a recommendation, especially in the field of education. But we sometimes pretend that no recommendations are made. And people accuse the opposition of not making alternative statements. Mr. Speaker, solutions could ask the government, what is the percentage of your project that has been implemented in the last 4 years? Because one of the things the government should really do is to come to this House and tell the people of this country what is the implementation rate of this project. Because nobody expects everything that you put down in a fiscal year to be accomplished. It would be very stupid for anybody to think that the government would be able to accomplish every single thing in our lives. In our lives, we do not accomplish everything that we put down. But at least you could account for what has been accomplished. But this government comes here, year after year, rehashes the same stories, never informed the people of this country what exactly it has accomplished in the last financial year. So I want to tell the government that good governance suggests you report to the people what has been accomplished and what you decide to do on the way forward. And this government point to any tangible and meaningful project that it has accomplished in the last 4 years? What are the major achievements of the government? And these are the questions that we must ask, because our young people, because we are giving them an education, they will ask us the hard questions. The government has not been able to make the distinction, Madam Speaker, between partisan politics and governance. There's a distinction between partisan politics. Robert is a politician. He will have partisan issues. But there's governance issues that the government failed to address. They talk about partisan politics most of the time in his house. Where is the governance that we're talking about? The government is always looking for an excuse why it didn't deliver on its mandate. Presents budget, presents manifestos. But this is not making excuses. What you ought to do, as I said before, is to come to this house and suggest to the people of this country to tell them why you achieved what you did and why you could not achieve what you had set in your previous year's budget. Government, as we said, is prioritized the government of delusion. They've made it their personal stuff. And because we have a 4.4% growth. Trump is a Biden Minister for Finance. How does this translate into jobs? How does this translate into positive economic benefits for the people of our country? Year after year, Madam Speaker, we listen in this house to statistics. And no one can show us how these bits of data have improved the lives of the average citizens of our country. You can hide behind the quantitative methods that you use at arriving at impressive data. What is most important is how do you see the people's lives have been affected qualitatively and very positive way. I want the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance to go to Swasho, to go to Cicero, to go to Banan, to go to Latok, to go to Monroe, to go to Goodland, to go to Lacroix, to go to Marigot, and tell the young people how that 4.4% has improved their life. It is good to just put statistics, but tell the people of Castro South how these economic benefits that you trumpeted in your budget speech, how it has affected the life positively. Because I live in Castro South and I have to be the one to face that music, that there are no jobs. I don't like them calling me busman because I'm no busman. I leave these terms should be used to other people. I'm not Boston. But at least the young people, they ask you this question. Where are the jobs? And as a member of Babula said, that's true. You cannot expect the government to provide them for all. But the government has a responsibility to provide for some. If not all, or most. You know, so we have to debunk the whole 4.4% growth. And then we don't feel it in our pocket. Maybe other people feel it in their pockets, but I don't. I don't. The Tunisian public, Madam Speaker, has two major expectations, and they had two major expectations of this year's budget. One, they were hoping to hear how we were going to improve their lives by providing some of our young people with more jobs. They didn't hear. Secondly, they were expecting to hear how the government was going to reduce the high price of food and fuel in this country. They didn't have it. You know, we can make excuses. All of us know in this house that we don't produce oil. We know that. But the member for Castro East told us where, give us the breakdown of how that fuel charge comes from. The government at least has $3 on every gallon of gas that's sold in this country. I heard the member for Schlossel say that the people, the government, must not bow to the fancies and the whims of the electorate. Since when I don't understand the member for Schlossel didn't understand that we're in a democracy, and the people are the ones who tell the government what to do. The government sets policy, but they have to meet the people's needs in a democracy. So it's a bit of arrogance, and there is a member for Babana. Confidence is not arrogant, but arrogance shows when you try to tell people you are not accountable to them. Now that's exactly what some members of the government do. When you ask questions, they tell you you're not entitled to ask questions. Yes, one tell the young people who have been educated in this country, you're not entitled to ask questions. The days when we stood in our little porches and told young people what we wanted, those of us who had a certain level of education or money, these days are gone. Education has leveled the playing field for all of us. All of us. To all of us. Madam Speaker, good governance demands that the welfare of the general public becomes one of the major foci of the government. Madam Speaker, I just want to raise an issue here. I heard a Minister for Education say that the UWI has discussions with the government about, let's say, the A-level program at class. Yeah, you said they're going to have discussions. If that's when they're going to have a discussion, that's a very late time to have that discussion. Yeah, as early as 2006, I've been saying, we need to relook at the arrangements for staff. We've been talking 4 years in this house. I'm going right there. 4 years in this house about having a university set up at staff. All these issues that we're talking about, like a new act to govern tertiary education, this issue does not been handled in the first instance. So before you can start a university, you put the act in place. And then you have discussion of how you're going to take off the A-level students. Don't tell me no, Mr. Minister. You cannot plan a university and you don't plan what are the attendant things you need to do before. It means that the minister stands there every year and he has the same thing about the BEAT program, which is the Basic Enhancement Education Project. We hear that every year that 9 schools are down for resolution. What is this about? Can we continue to tell young people in this country that every year we're going to hear the same story? Every year we're going to hear the same story? Madam Speaker, progress means that we plan. And it is 4 years to 5 years we're hearing the same story about Zafra going to become a university college. Because there is no planning about this. In fact, I hear the Prime Minister, the only Prime Minister said, there's a member for Mikunov, he's resolved that very little about it. The Prime Minister said $190,000 that we spent in research, I think. After 4 years of talking, only two posts have been put up for Zafra in that regard. What do we have to show in 4 years where we want our education system to go? What do we have to show? And as a member for Mikunov wants me to talk, sorry. I can give him a document that I prepared as early as 2006 to show how we should have moved this year. And that's why, because we don't consult, we think we know all the answers. We don't know all the answers. That's why professionalism means we speak to each other. I've never been invited to anything on education in this country when it comes to SAFA. SAFA is not the preserve of any political party. SAFA belongs to all of us. It is where we're going to get our young people trained beyond the secondary level. And if this government doesn't realize that it needs to engage the opposition in discussion. Because not because I disagree with you, but I don't respect you. Every time you make these points, they make the same argument. Nobody has asked me to come to any function that I have decided not to go to a function. I'm not talking about the leader of the opposition. Give him a break, he's not here. When he arrives, you talk to him. What's obsessed with him? Madam Speaker, in the vein that they say we do not make recommendations, I always speak on education, and I'm ready to speak on education and make recommendations to our country about what are the things we ought to do with education. We are in the same position as we were in 2006. Nothing has changed since 2006. The Labour Party achieved, and it is not just the Labour Party, but successive governments of this country. Successive governments of this country have worked towards achieving universal secondary education, but it was achieved under the Labour Party. But we should have moved a little further after 4 years. We should have been way ahead after 4 years. And that is where I'm going to give suggestions of where we're going now. Madam Speaker, don't worry about these guys. When you write them, they don't respond. Let's talk a little about early education, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, on the area of education, early education. Madam Speaker, the period between birth and 5 years old is when many of the critical stages of brain development occur in a child. Unfortunately, a large percentage of our children in that age group in St. Lucia do not benefit from structured early education. Research has shown that children who are not exposed to quality early childhood education or development activities during this period can develop problems that proceed deep into adulthood. Therefore, Madam Speaker, it will be a goal of an St. Lucia Labour Party government to increase the level of public investment in early childhood education and make it possible for children from disadvantaged families to attend preschool in their communities free of charge. As a result of universal secondary education, there is now space capacity in some of our primary schools, even our secondary schools. And I heard the minister speak yesterday, and I agree with the minister. But the minister made it look like a big science. Why is there space in our schools? You know what? It's a simple thing. The birth rate has fallen. It's a simple thing, Mr. Minister. The birth rate has fallen. So I don't know why we make it a big thing about this space. Yes, there is space, but it is better to have more space than too little space. So yes, when I went to primary school, many of my classmates were deprived of a secondary education. Is it right? You must not say because there is less more space that USC was wrong. In fact, in this house, in 2007, a lot of noise was made about USC now. It is now 4.5 years. Under the 2007-2008 budget, the then Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Honorable Sir John Compton DC, he set up and financed under that budget an education task force led by a whole member of this house, former Minister of Education. It is now 4 years. Not one report, Madam Speaker, has been brought to this house to tell us what are some of the problems that we are going to experience, or we are experiencing in having achieved USC. And this is what I am. And I know, Madam Speaker, that I'm coming to business. Where is the report? And I've been asking it for the last 3 years. I keep asking. Because the people of this country demand of the government, the democracy, that they provide the information at the right time, not when the government wants. And these are the kind of things that you expect. All of us who are educated, or we are stakeholders, all parents are, we expect at least there to be discussion on issues that affect us in the country. But this government pretends that it's the preserve of the government to keep all information. So it invites nobody in the opposition on any issue. You don't consult you on any issue. You don't want to consult some people. Don't. But you can find some people who are amenable to you, and you can consult them. You know, Madam Speaker, early childhood education, as I said just now, is very important. There's some space capacity in some of our primary schools. After the Form 5, started 4, which is what we call grade, well, we never really call them, could have been grade 7. There's some space in some of our secondary schools. Some of that space in the interim period could be used for early childhood education. Madam Speaker, as the Minister of the Government will increase the level of support to the roving caregivers program. I hear the minister say that it's coming to an end, and I hope we can get resources for them, Mr. Minister, because I think it's a wonderful program. It has done extremely well for St. Lucia, and some people are already looking for funding for it and encouraging it. Madam Speaker, primary education. Member for Gaston South, if you could take some notes. Primary education. In 1998, Madam Speaker, the government of St. Lucia, under the St. Lucia Labour Party, implemented the minimum standard exam. These exams are meant to be formative. Formative to mean that the results of these exams are supposed to be put back into our system so we could see where the weaknesses are in our system, and we can use the information gleaned from these exams to help our students with remediation. It is now at least some 13 years since these first exams, these exams were first implemented. We didn't just implement these exams so that we can know which students got 60%. The exam was not. As I said, it's a formative exam, not a summative exam. Formative. All the problems that we now begin to see in our secondary schools. We should have taken some of the results of these exams and to begin to remediate some of the problems, provide remediation for some of the problems. So when the ministry says that they do not know why they're going to be talking, they're going to be discussing if the initiative has been not good, but we should be using the results of these exams to further the progress of our children. And that's exactly what the minimum standard exam was supposed to be. So it is about remediation, formative, these exams. So, and I don't care which administration does not do it, the point is, we are paying money to execute these exams. These exams are supposed to give us information of where we are in grade 2, which I think grade 2 is supposed to be standard, as well as that. That's grade 3, grade 4, which is standard 2, and grade 9, which is form 3. Each of these key stages of our education should provide enough information. We have, I'm sure, we have so much data that we can use to help build our system. We have so much data, rich data we can use. And think of when we graduate a child from primary school to secondary school, we want to ensure that that child has the skills and the ability to succeed at the higher level. Every level must be catered for. We must not move students to the next level because they just reached there. We must make sure they've reached the level and they have the competency at that level. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Education will also embark on the immediate reform of the primary school curriculum so that it provides children the skills they need to succeed in this new competitive, knowledge-driven world. Our children must have not just the academic intelligence, but also the emotional intelligence to succeed. Our system presently, and it's not anybody's fault, I'm not blaming anybody, I'm saying we've reached the point where emotional intelligence has become one of the things that we aim to achieve. It must provide both them, both academic and emotional intelligence. Therefore, as a result of the government, we'll engage the Caribbean Examination Council in discussion on the reform of the primary school curriculum so that our children can develop a better understanding of ICTs. So it's not just putting ICTs in schools. It is what is the objective of having the ICT? The importance, for example, of multiculturalism, which will include fluency in languages of our region, as English, Spanish, and French. An appreciation for the arts, as you heard a member of before, Northwest, and higher standards of numeracy and literacy. Madam Speaker, we need to move. And I when you congratulate people, they don't say, well, you don't hear the member for Southwest Council saying other things. I applaud the minister for saying, the literacy money, me, we have to encourage this. We have to encourage more parents to read to the children at night. This is where we want to go, to make the rate of literacy and numeracy in our country, to grow it. Madam Speaker, free vision and hearing test. As the Minister of the government will provide free vision and hearing test for every child entering primary school and every child entering secondary school. We are very concerned that undetected physical ailments may be affecting the learning abilities of our children. And we do not think it is fair that these should go uncorrected simply because the parents do not know better or lack the financial means to give it up. You know, listening to the members of us, I have to think about it. It's a promise. We're talking about where our country should go. We must promise. Give revelation. Because, first thing I got for 22 years and I still teach. We see children, but sometimes by the time they're in form three, nobody knew they were dyslexic. Because the parents were not able to give them that test. And the point is, always saying, are we making promises? Yes. And promises that can be fulfilled. I'll speak of both three to graduate primary school children. Both three. I'll speak of the parent of every child. And the member of that board doesn't understand the word school. There's no government of Tennessee has removed both trees anyway. No government of Tennessee. There was subsidy for that. But that's gone. But both trees have always been the prison of every government of this country. Adam Speaker, the parent of every child who graduates from primary school to secondary school will be given a bursary of $500 to assist with meeting the additional financial burden that secondary school charities will impose. I think I've been doing this for the last 4 years in Castries South. I know what it means for those parents who first time secondary school children. And people tell me in this house, oh, Robert, you have money. No, I don't have money. But I will beg whoever I have to have those persons who are not able, all of us are not able to desist. Those persons who need for the first time their children to go to secondary school, but they don't have the means. USC has provided space for everybody. While accessibility has been improved, affordability is the next issue we have to think about in secondary education. In Creole, secondary education. It is clear there is a need for significant reform of our secondary education system. We have seen increased numbers of boys dropping out in our schools, especially at the form school. Declining rates of school attendance and even increases in repetition of forms. The vast majority of the students who sit the CXC exam do not necessarily receive the 5 minimum passes we expect, especially math and English, which is expected for levels of matriculation to the higher levels of tertiary education as well as to the job market. Therefore, starting his first term of office, the Tennessee Labour Party will embark on a comprehensive reform of the secondary education system. We are aware that discussions have already started at the regional level in these areas. And our government will ensure that we do what is consistent with the steps taken by the OECS and the CARICOM members. Madam Speaker, the problem is most of the time, whenever you be asked for recommendations, you give recommendations when you give it, as if to suggest that in the preserve, and some people not realize, some people live in the different field. Those of us in education, we spend time looking at our field in education. We read what's happening in education in the region. So I think it's very ridiculous to say that somebody gave us this idea. Madam Speaker, let's talk about other initiatives. Because you wanted recommendations. I'm giving new ones there in this house. I said, listen about the government. We'll provide every child entering Form 4 with a laptop. Because this is where we have to go, to make it available to them free of charge. In the words of CFC Registrar Dr. D. Vickers Jules, we cannot continue to teach digital children in analog classrooms. For our children to excel in knowledge-driven world, they must have the tools. And the solution of the government will provide them with these tools. Mentoring and civic responsibility. And as we got, the solution of the government will support the formation of after-school clubs. And we will encourage volunteers to work with children in mentoring and homework assistance program. And you can see my speaker. I mean, started in some communities already. Washoe is a very good after school program. In Lamar, Suzuki. You know, education is a very important tool. Education is. And speaker, we need to encourage. And I've heard in the past, I heard from the time this government came to power that there would be a threat to go towards encouraging uniform groups. After 4 years, there seems to be nothing done in that regard. But not for the mission of our government. We'll make sure we go after school clubs that will encourage people to provide support for young people. Mentors, the mentoring and civic responsibility. We think it's critical that our young people understand their role in national development and their civic responsibility. So as part of our overhaul of the secondary school curriculum, we'll make it mandatory that every child give us a specific number of community service as a condition for graduation secondary school. And that's not the first time I've said this in this house. Because when you want to engage young people, you must make them realize that it's important for them to show civic responsibility so they can take part in national functions. So before you graduate from secondary school, because everybody can go to secondary school, but to show that you care about your country, you learn to give national service. After school club, our party believes it is important for us to support the formation of after school club. We want to encourage responsible parents to work with children in mentoring and homework assistance programs. That is why we will develop a formula to convert hours spent in after school programs to an income tax deduction for those who participate in the program. When you want people to volunteer, at least you give them something. Post-secondary education. St. Lucia's University enrollment rate is currently less than 10%. That is unacceptable. Everyone is less than 10%. They can put any number you want to. If we want to compete in a global market, we must provide more opportunities for our young people to get tertiary education. And any effort in that regard is commendable. Any effort. Our goal in the short to medium term is to increase enrollment at the tertiary level to the point where by the year 2020, one out of every four households in our country has at least one person who has completed their education at the tertiary level. And we'll have a team to help that. The moment isn't really a name for it, but something about greater access to tertiary education. And the program will do so by doing the following. Establishing a financing mechanism to guarantee 60% of a student loan for students who otherwise would not be able to afford a university education. The unfortunate standard that we witnessed on hold last year is the IIT students. Must never be allowed to happen again. And certainly will never occur under Labour government. Intensifying efforts to source and secure scholarships for qualified St. Lucian citizens to pursue tertiary level education at accredited institutions. We intend to use our foreign missions very aggressively in this regard. There are many schools all over where we have foreign missions. Be more than happy to sit down and listen to how they can make contributions to our educational philosophy. Working with the commercial banks to review the role the priority list plays in determining eligibility for student loans. We do not believe, or I certainly do not believe, that loans should be denied to people who can demonstrate means to repay their student loans simply because the subject they choose to study is not on the priority list. I mean, that is wrong. People show the means they can pay their loans. They choose to go and study whatever area they choose to study. Once they can pay their loans, we should make sure that mechanism is for them. There is importance of a priority list. Yes, there is importance. But there are people who need to study areas that they want to study. That's not true, Mr. Minister. You know that's not true. Mr. Minister, you know that's not true. That's not true. Because the priority is generally guys. The bank has to work. You see, it is one thing when you think you know. I sit sometimes at Monroe College and you get calls that suggest to you, is this theory on the priority list? Even if the person can see, it's on the priority list, Madam Speaker. It's very difficult for the student to get a look. And I move on. Madam Speaker, let's talk about teachers, people who are very dear to me. A successful education system requires a cadre of competent and motivated teachers. We must be able to attract and retain, qualified and inspired teachers, particularly in subjects like mathematics, science, English, ICT, and the arts. Madam Speaker, our party is committed to improving the opportunities for teacher professional development. And at the start of our, whenever we get into power, we'll commence dialogue with the Senior Teachers Union, because we understand them, to undertake the following. One, review teachers' salary structure and incentives to allow for performance-based rewards. To devise strategies to increase the number of teachers in critical subject areas. To encourage more males to join the teaching service to correct the gender imbalance. Introduce teacher career ladders that will allow teachers to progress through the system based on accepted professional standards. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to talk a little about the University accreditation. Of course, I give credit to the Minister. I read something about accreditation. But I simply want to say what I said literally about the government would do. Recently, a number of offshore education institutions have come into the sub-region offering programs of study in medicine and other areas. Many of our countries have benefited academically, economically, and socially from the establishment of these schools. Unfortunately, however, while many of these institutions are reputable and provide an excellent service, they currently operate without any form of regulation. That is why an SLC government, soon after assuming office, will introduce an accreditation bill which will allow for the creation of a national authority to accredit tertiary institutions and study programs. The passage of this bill has become even more urgent in light of information that indicates, Madam Speaker, that the United Workers Party administration has given permission for a new medical school to operate in the new mental hospital without going through any of the established processes and to clearly violate the Education Act. Clearly, if such a program is operated, and we have been informed, and I have been informed personally, that it may be doing so under the name Atlantic University School of Medicine, we would need to know what roles the Ministers of Health, Education, and the Attorney General had in this decision. Also consistent, Madam Speaker, with our thrust towards university accreditation, it would be necessary for us to find out, based on what I just said, whether there is still a medical school monitoring and accreditation committee in place. Did the body review the application of the medical school? That's the one I mentioned a while ago, Atlantic University School of Medicine. Did the body approve any license for the school to operate? Were any of the officials involved in healthcare, service planning, delivery of administration involved in decision making? If so, who are they and who is the concern? Were any of the officials of the Ministry of Education who are responsible for education planning, delivery, or administration involved in the decision? If so, why, who would be consulted? Everybody knows that there's a school, something here, there's a school operating in our new wellness center. Nobody's told the country. Why is this happening? This wasn't built for schools to operate. It was built for us to use as a facility. Of course, you can have learning happening in a hospital, but the school is not functioning in a hospital without our knowledge. The next one is, well, good one. Does the medical school have an approved trade license to conduct business in the mission? Has the medical school applied for the requisite trade license? I'll come to that. Are there local shareholders in any company that owns and operates the medical school? Honestly, I know these questions will not be answered, but I know how to find the answer for this question, and I know how some people can pay for these issues. The people of St. Lucia will hear more about it. How much does the medical school agree to pay for use of the mental hospital complex? We have to know that as a country. Is the tax due as mental? To whom? Or what was the payment made? Is the payment being made into the consolidated fund under an approved head by the Ministry of Finance? I didn't see that. Has the European Union, which is financing the construction of the new national hospital on the same site, been consulted on the decision to allow the medical school to operate? The last question I'll ask in that regard, Madam Speaker, and I don't expect anybody is going to answer the question, but St. Lucia will know. Does the government have any information that suggests the operator, CEO, of this medical school previously attempted to operate a medical school in the United Kingdom, which was closed down in suspicion of its fraudulent? These issues would never arise if we had a university accreditation legislation, which is why we intend, as a little government, to place this legislation before this Honourable House very early in our first term of office. Madam Speaker, I move to you for some youth issues. We think it is vitally important, Madam Speaker, that our government places the youth very high on our agenda. There are some figures that put this into perspective. Madam Speaker, unemployment of young men between the ages of 15 and 19 is over 60%. Unemployment of young girls in the same age range is 57%. Between the ages of 20 and 24, Madam Speaker, 37 of our young men are unemployed, and that's why I want them to go into school and to go into CICERO. Tell the Prime Minister, don't explain to these 37% of our young people where that 4.4% growth lies in their pocket. Madam Speaker, 25% of those between the ages of 25 in that age group are unemployed, and they are women. 24% are not yet. And Speaker, the CARICOM Commission on Youth Development report of January 2010 indicates that if we are able to reduce youth unemployment in St. Lucia to the same level of adult unemployment, we will see a growth, of 2.5% in our GDP. That report also indicates that youth crime and violence lowers St. Lucia's GDP by 4%. Therefore, as soon as the St. Lucia Labour Party get into office, we will unveil and implement a comprehensive youth development program, which, when completed, will cause a permanent increase of 6.5 in our GDP. These figures are based on facts, on hard empirical facts, and not on voodoo mathematics, on creative accounting like changes that is doing the GDP calculations using a revised method. The other reason, Madam Speaker, is critical to reduce youth unemployment can be found from information from St. Lucia's Department of Statistics that suggests between 3,500 and 4,000 young people will enter the market, labor market in our country every year for the next few years. Our development program will have the following components: an aggressive youth employment component, a youth skills expansion component, very important, expansion, because the NSBC is a creature of the individual party. A vibrant spot for development component, a healthier youth component, an engaged youth component, and all that will come in the first year of office of the individual party. And Speaker, the individual party government will initiate our creative industries program We shall provide new opportunities for our young people in an exciting high growth area. We'll develop a renewable energy industry that will open up new spheres of opportunities for our youth. And Speaker will expand access to high-speed internet across our country by creating Wi-Fi enabled communities, access points, and providing free broadband access in all our human resource development centers. That way, our youth will have access to the internet to learn and to market their skills. And Speaker will expand access to agricultural land through initiatives that my colleague, a member of you but not, has already articulated. Through our reform of the school curriculum, we'll promote and expand youth entrepreneurship in schools. And Speaker, we'll re-establish a revamped STEP program that will provide employment for the large number of young people who have difficulty in the short term, taking advantage of employment in these new growth areas, but which will have a component of skill training. And Speaker, in our discussions with business leaders, we have been told that many of our young people who apply for jobs are deficient in 1, soft skills; 2, the ability to learn new concepts; 3, self-initiative; and 4, professional skills. Therefore, in the first year of the Tennessee Party government, we will start a youth skills program that will include providing direct support to care and assisting them in establishing a fully resourced learning center. We'll ensure that subjects like life education, ethics, civics, ICT, creative arts, and physical education feature prominently on the curriculum. We'll take immediate steps to significantly improve levels of literacy and numeracy. And Speaker, developing educational program for NTN that can be used for self-instruction at the secondary and post-secondary level. Increasing the level of representation of private sector employers on the management board of educational institutions. And Speaker, our third component will be geared towards developing healthier, more engaged, community-minded, and disciplined youth. In the first year of the Timothy Party, we will insist that the Ministry of Sport and the Ministry of Social Transition work together to revitalize the trust structure in our community. We'll set up a coaching division in the Ministry of Sport to provide specialist training for all development programs. We'll commence the development of an elite training center at the George Putnam National Stadium. Now, Speaker, we will ensure that organized sports activities take place regularly at the preschool, primary, and secondary levels. Our Speaker, will mandate NTN to provide wide coverage of local sports events. Finally, Madam Speaker, we will develop a database of all St. Lucians who have represented their country in sports, past and present, and ensure that these illustrious sons and daughters are given the recognition and support. You know, I listened to some members in this house, and it's commendable that they can speak with other police ministers about what is happening in their constituencies. Speaker, it's bad manners that somebody writes you, somebody sends you the correspondence, and you do not respond, even to say that I will get to you at a later date. So at this time, Madam Speaker, I'd like to address, please have addressed, that I've been recommendations that we've always been accused of, because every year I've stood in this house, anybody goes to answer, I've always made recommendations. I don't just come back to them and make recommendations. Now that I've made recommendations from the national policy area, I'd like to look at my constituency country. Doesn't matter who's there. I will never give the people of Capture South a 649. Never. I won't give it to them.
Honourable Member, before you begin, let me just inform the members of the gallery, the public, that still photography is not allowed in the chamber.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The people of Capture South know Robert Lewis. They know who he's
talking about. Sorry, Just to make it clearer, you are not allowed to take pictures in the parliament. Sorry.
Hello, Governor. Don't attach yourself in the Robert Lewis. They know in the 5 years he's represented them, he's given them quality representation. No scandal. No scandal. The most I can tell you is how much was done because this government is suffocating you. Suffocating. 4 years. 4 years before the government could lift a finger to begin to think that Castro South is another part of St. Lucia. 4 years. 4 years. As early, you know when this whole thing started? As early as maybe August 2010. Because the United Workers Party can see that they have a person to represent them. This is not what good governance is, and that's why I made the point earlier. There is partisan politics and there's governance. The people of Castro South are entitled to projects because they are taxpayers in the country. I don't care, what is happening. I don't care about the past. I look at the past. I want to look at what I'm doing for Castro South. I am interested in Castro South. I represent them at this moment. I like ministers of government, especially the Ministry of Communication and Works. In fact, my last two letters were about landslides in Pastor Joseph. Government will take a few postures, you know. Either they don't respond to me and they go to the prospective candidate, or they just ignore you altogether. That's how they deal with issues. They ignore you. I'm not crying. The people of Castro South are the ones who will make that decision. And when that time comes, I can assure you, they will make the right decision. See, I believe in them. I don't believe in the government, this government. I believe in the people of Castro South.
Honourable Member, you have 10 more minutes to complete your presentation.
Madam Speaker, I rise to ask for the suspension of Standing Order 3210 to allow the member 30 more minutes to complete his presentation. 30 minutes.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order, the House invokes Standing Order 3210 to allow the Honourable Member for Castro South an additional 13 minutes to complete his presentation. I now put the question, as many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of a contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. Honourable Member, you have an additional 13 minutes.
Thank you, members of the House, for giving me additional 30 minutes. I'm not going to be crying. I have cried for 4 years. And it's human to cry. You don't cry, you're not human. But the point is, Madam Speaker, I have made the point, and that's a new governance structure that I'd like to see in this country. Irrespective of which party forms the government, there will be allocations of constituencies. And at least I commend the Prime Minister. I don't play the politics. At least he heard me for 3 years before. He put a CDD program. And I hope in these $10 million allocated this financial year, that some $500,000-$600,000 will go to Castro South. I always ask for Castro South. Everybody has the right to ask for his constituents. My responsibility in this House is to Castro South. And there's only one parliamentary rep in Castro South. And the people of Castro South, they always tell you that. But, Madam Speaker, in our own way, we've done what we can do in Castro South. There are things Robert Lewis can do without the central government, and he's going to continue doing. One of those things, and if you look at my motto, right throughout 2006, it says, empowering through education and community development. I believe in education, man. I've said it before. My father never had the opportunity to even attend primary school. but yet saw the importance of making sure his children were educated. And I believe in education. And you have a right to it. Through our own efforts, we have been able to implement in Castro South the Passion Scholarship Program. And it has been going on for the past 5 years. And we will continue to do it, especially for the poor families in Castro South. It's based on merit, but we still help those who cannot meet the academic standards that we set. And Speaker, I don't need the central government to do that. I get support from private sector and friends and well-wishers. And I commend these people for what they have done for us in the last 5 years. I have taken it on my own now, Speaker, in the last 4 years to run what I call the mathematics workshop. Because as a past teacher, secondary teacher, I understand that there is the pass rate in mathematics, as the minister said, it's too low. We need to bring it up. So for the past 4 years, I'm not dependent on the government to do that for me. In Castro South, the mathematics workshop has been going on, where about 70 young people come at the beginning of the school year, and Robert Lewis teaches them mathematics, because I have the skills that it takes to teach them. I do not need the central government. And so I thank all these parents who supported the young people who have been through the program and have benefited. And this is how we've done in our own place. Madam Speaker, there are a lot of little things that we've done, along with the bus drivers in Castro South. When the government is unable, or refuses to do potholes, we will do it ourselves. Why some people will tell you that's not your job. But the responsibility is on the parliamentary rep to meet with the other stakeholders in the constituency and to do those things that he or she can do. Madam Speaker, I have cooperated as much as I can with any minister of government once the ministers asked for my cooperation. In 2008, Madam Speaker, I was asked by the Ministry of Communication Works to set aside a day when the ministry would go for my constituents with me and they would identify projects that we would do together as a government. I do not know if it was a publicity stunt, but I took it in good faith that the ministry was meeting with my constituency and they would take me through. And we had a wonderful time that day in April 2008. The Ministry of Communication Works, along with the Ministry of Finance, we had a contingent of about 22 persons. And we started as early as 10 o'clock in Kuasho, and we made our way right to the constituency, and we ended up in Marigold, the last point in my constituency. And Speaker, subject to our talk with these two ministries, the Ministry of Works sent me a list of projects that we identified together. We posted it, and they presented these projects to me. Up to date, not one. There are at least, it's a 9-page report, man. Posted, well posted. Professionally done by the members of the engineers in the Ministry of Works. But that's just another speaker. Not one of this project. After 3 years, I've come through the parliamentary rep, because some have been done. At least one I can speak of in a while. Has been done, not through the parliamentary rep. Madam Speaker, I think it is very unnerving. Our young people will think that there is what you call representation. And representation suggests, Madam Speaker, that the person, irrespective of who she is or who he is, the person who has been selected in one constituency will be given that right to decide what happens in the constituency over a period. Elected. My figure, it is not right for me to ask the Minister for Communication and Works what is happening in good land for a road that we, since 2007, have been talking to the government about in good land. And for the minister to tell me in this house about a month ago, he knows nothing about any roads right here in Goodland. But the ministry's vehicles are there every day. And I go to Goodland, these are my people, and they tell me who it is who's giving them the contract for this job. Manspeaker is wrong. And the Attorney General should know, as the legal officer of this government, he is not supposed to engage in legal activities. How can he do that? How can he do that? The legal advisor of the government is involved in illegal acts. What do you leave for those out there? The government pushes money through him. And Speaker, to do a road in Goodland, you know that, Mr. Minister. Mr. Minister, you know that. Madam Speaker, if I am the parliamentary rep of class itself, I should be consulted when the roads have been done in Goodland. That's why the people elected me. They didn't elect me just to be on a pedestal. They put me there to look after their business for them. And that is why I'm saying it is wrong for the government to bypass the elected member. But I thank the government anyhow for whatever they've done, because they're just doing it for election purposes. But the people of Castro itself will deal with him. He gets it done. Don't worry. Madam Speaker, we must encourage good governance. And that is why I keep making the point there's a difference between partisan politics. Robert has no problem whatsoever with a contending person in any political party. The gentleman and I can speak. But the point is, I am the parliamentary rep, and I expect all projects within Castro South at least to be notified of them. So when my people ask me questions, I can tell them, yes, I am aware of this. And let me just say, Madam Speaker, it is not just in one area, you know, these things happen. It just happens over and over, especially in the last 8 months. I mean, after Hurricane Thomas, I went up pain to go through the entire constituency as a parliamentary, but I know every member of this House went through his or her parliament constituency. Every. I would want to say every, and be honest. But it is wrong when I ask of things to be done in that yourself. Nobody responds to me, but I see being done through the prospective candidate of the Inadvocate Party. That should never happen, Madam Speaker. And besides, I keep saying, and I tell the young people, he is the Attorney General, he is the legal officer of the government. Let's look at the modus operandi of this government. The modus operandi of this government, Madam Speaker, is just give the works to your prospective candidate so they can say they get it done, so the people will think that they can get it done and they will vote for them. But people are not stupid. All the projects that have been outlining Castro for the last 4 years, Robert Lewis has covered them. It means that the brain is functioning. I don't mind the gentleman identifying some project that he can find financing somewhere, but not from the central government. That's not his responsibility. The people of Castro itself, Madam Speaker, they've been left for 4 years. They've been left for 4 years. Nothing was done for them, even when the parliamentary rep stood here on many occasions. Madam Speaker, I have written again. We keep talking about the tourism product. I have written about the Marigo route. Marigo is part of the tourism product. The government, I talk about Marigo. Government refuses to look into Marigo. Marigo is one of the places where a lot of tourists go on a daily basis, especially when the boats are young. And speaking of Marigo, I would like the member for Castro Central to tell us in this house, after 4 years, what has happened to the Marigo housing project? There's one government that comes and say everything that it's going to do and stuff and is busy. How much has been spent on that Marigo project? Not one house has been built, Madam Speaker. In fact, one house was put there, I think, by some company, and there's somebody living in it. But no houses have been built after 4 years. Where are the promises that this government makes to the people? Well, I just give you a story. That means I didn't know too. Yeah, that's what you'll say. three houses are there, two are there as exhibition, Mr. Minister. I know about it, I know about it. Two are exhibitions, they're not houses that we live in. Understand the mechanics, Mr. Minister. There's only one that is being used now. But the point I'm making is, the Marigold project was started September 2007. The then Prime Minister, McDonald, was there. We're talking about the end of a term of government and the houses have not been built in Marigold. Somebody needs to tell us a little more about the financial arrangement, how much has been spent, and so on. I figure it is the modus operandi of this government not to tell us how much a project will cost, and they will never be able to use the word cost to run. I figure I'd like to thank the SSDF. I'd like to thank them. No, I try to be very, very honest with anybody. The SSDF for refurbishing the cost that I asked them to in Cicero. Some people went to Cicero after the project began. The court, a court that had been started before this Bureau of Prospective Candidature, but they go and like the Bureau of Cicero, that they will reposition court. You don't go telling people things that they know about. They know better. It would be foolhardy to think you can fool the people of that yourself. Very educated people, that yourself. Thank you very much, SFDS, for refurbishing the court and for processing the court. Thank you. Thank you to SFDS for the footpaths that they put at the Millennium Highway. This government and all solutions entitled to government resources. So I thank the SFDS. But I also want to thank under the CDP.
1 minute, member. Can I ask the member of the public to withdraw from the chamber immediately? Discussions by members of the public will not be tolerated. Let's continue.
Yes, member for Babylon. Mr. Government, notice I am being very candid. I said SSDF, I stood by the agency. And I'm saying thank you for the CDP program. At least I can say one project was completed. You cash yourself to the tune of $28,000. Some footpaths that have been begging different agencies to do. Got one of these done, and I understand. Another one has been earmarked for Marigold to the tune of about $117,000. What I want to say, Madam Speaker, it's not that Robert Louis has just sat here. I have gone to my constituency and I've identified, I can't say all, because I will never be able to identify all the projects that need to be done. And that's why their prospective candidates on the other side. You can identify also. But I don't want a project being given to people who are not thought about projects. And they just take my project and they run it. Huh? Think of your own project. Show your creativity. Yeah, they just come and they reach onto your project. Sad state of affairs, don't you think? Lazy, yeah, that's the word. I don't mind if the prospective candidate for another party would find a good project in Catch Yourself and Robert will say before you help me. I don't mind. Because at the end of the day, the people of Catch Yourself benefit. But don't listen to my project. Thank you. Get your own project. My project. Yes, Mr. Minister. It is my idea. Speaker, No, I'll never give them a 6.9. Last week, one of the things that we love about these things, but I just want to bring to the attention of the Minister for Works. I heard the Prime Minister, and he's right, there are a lot of non-communicable diseases. These are very much on the rise in Kenya. And there are things we can do, Madam Speaker, to really alleviate some of these conditions that create some of these problems. For example, the cul-de-sac valley, which is adjacent to Cicero and Goodland. This area has not been, the waterways have not been cleaned in the last 3 years. The waterways in cul-de-sac. So, Minister, if you want, I'll take you there after the budget debate. I have said it to the ministry. In fact, on our tour, I did show the waterways that lead into the, not Asiri, but as Magion, in the Hess Bay there. In the Hess Bay. That has not been done in the last 2 years. The waters are sitting there. Anybody who lives in the constituency can go there now. And the waters are sitting there. And these waters, Madam Speaker, these waters are the places where a lot of mosquitoes breed. Always saying, Madam Speaker, and I hate when men try to just be little things. Always saying is to clear the waters so they flow into the bay. Because the people of Cicero, those who live in Cicero, those who live in Goodlands and cul-de-sac, they are the ones who feel the mosquito infestation, not you, Mr. Minister. So all we're saying is, we're saying, please clear the waterway. The waterway. Madam Speaker, the roads in my constituency, they need urgent attention. Mr. Member, the lands are in my constituency. Let me just give you a better look. Think about where the prospective member for your party was launched, right? Think about it. The lands that go behind that, if you want me to tell you, the simplest you had the stage, the tent, the area behind it. And to my understanding, besides, was there any... So again, the honorable member, he's Attorney General. Is there any legal right through the Crown Lands for him to do what he did down there on January the 6th? Oh, yeah. Madam Speaker, the roads in Castries South are in a deplorable condition. All the roads, most of the roads, I think. Starting with George Cooper Road. The Kubari Road. In fact, the Kubari Road is an interesting one because the Prime Minister wrote me a letter in November after he responded, and that is one of the persons who responds to me sometimes. He responded by saying the roads in Kubari will be dealt with. It is now 4 years, and these roads are still. I have made it point clear here. I don't care who had been parliamentary representative before. I speak on behalf of all the people of Castro. Whether you think they are affluent, Kubarel is no longer private property. All St. Lucians go for Kubarel. So I speak on behalf of the people of Kubarel that the roads need some work. The people of Cicero have some work. That they need that. Bastion and Joseph and Marigo have spoken about that already. And I'm speaking. Let me give you a case in Bastion Joseph to show you how we don't think, we do things that are expedient, politically expedient. After Hurricane Thomas last, there are two major landslides in Bastion Joseph. And I'm thinking, if you're going to do drainage, you must clear landslides to ensure that there is a path for the waters to flow. And I'm thinking, I wrote the Ministry of Works on the Bastion Joseph issue. I'm not saying the ministry will get everything done. But to think that the same ministry would give contracts to people through the prospective candidate, 200 yards below a landslide. The landslide is not clear, but drainage works have been done 200 yards below that same landslide. Africa, you see how people do things just for political expedience. We do things, but we don't take care of the bigger picture. The landslide is supposed to be cleared first, and then the project can come. Now that was a little project that he thought about. Yeah. Give him a little credit. But drains that are preserved of the Ministry of Work. But he thought a little project. And figure out that for the seriousness of this thing, how could you have landslides in an area and the drains are not clear? You can be disappointed from now to eternity. You will. And speaker, we are aware that Pastor Joseph needs a lot of things. I've said it before, Pastor Joseph needs a playing field. They need somebody of the rescue. They need a human resource development center. I can shut up with Pastor Joseph. Because they will be, the people of culture itself will be led the parliamentary. And they can be sure that under a St. Lucia Labour Party government, that this project will be done through the parliamentary representative Robert Lewis. There will Robert Lewis as the parliamentary. And there is Cicero. Cicero's side demands additional infrastructure and facilities. For example, Cicero, Papa Cicero needs a human resource development center. Papa Cicero needs a court. Papa Cicero needs a court. These are areas, things that we need to do. Thank you, member. These are things that we need to do to push development in these areas. To my flip matter speaker. I mean, when we have discussions, and I thought thank you to the ministry, but when we have discussions with the Ministry of Work on the Suma Fleet project where we had some steps done, my intention at the time I said to the ministry was to make sure that we followed the route that was there and put a concrete route in. But that was not done because the ministry had its own plans. I'm not blaming the minister. The ministry has its own plans because of land issues. But we really need to really look at that Suma Fleet area. So I'm telling the people of Suma Fleet that this area will be looked at. We'll grade this set. I think we're going to put back the road that was there when I went in this area as a child. Fuasho, there are people in Fuasho, Madam Speaker, who have ambition to own their own piece of land. They do. Now, I've said it before. I'm telling them again. Under St. Lucia Labour Party government, with Robert Lewis as the parliamentary leader, I will ensure that those persons who are desirous of getting a piece of property to move away from the congestion in Fuasho, that they will get. I've already thanked the Ministry of Social Transformation for the after school program. I think it's doing excellent things for the people of Fuasho. It also exhibits the talent that is available in Fuasho. But our young people have talent. And when we try to get that talent together, we can see great things coming from there. I was at a program that they had on Sunday. I understand the member for Castries North was supposed to be there, but I suppose he had other pressing issues. No? So I was just cautious. I was just saying, okay, it wasn't in that. But I think it just shows that the after-school program is an excellent program. And I think I would like to recommend it for other areas in St. Lucia. Speaker. Banan is not forgotten. Banan is one of those areas that we spent over an hour during our tour 2008 where we decided we were going to do some work through the field. We were going to look at the ring road that goes around the Banan field. And at this moment, we need to refend that Banan field. We need to provide young people in Tashkisha with the right amendment. And I can assure them, I cannot assure them that under this government that I will get anything much less. But I can assure them that under the St. Lucia Labour Party government, that with Robert Lewis as the parliamentary, most, if not all of the things that they've been asking, will be done on the behalf. As you guys see, I want to thank the people of Castries itself. Just standing here is a singular honor that the people of Castries itself have bestowed upon me. I would not be standing here if it were not for the people of Kamsun Town. And when I stand there to represent them in all factors. And I want to thank them for their patience with the parliamentary reps. They recognize that the parliamentary reps may ask for things that he may not get. They recognize that he may get something. And when he gets a little, they say thank you. And I want to thank them for their gratitude. And I want to thank the government upon their behalf for whatever little has been done. I want to thank the persons in the Kamsun South constituency office, Marianne Wallace, Nathan, and Nadia Mertil Joseph, for their labor of love for the people of Kamsun South that they go through, and they go through many things that they have to endure. Things they have to endure. So I tell them thank you for their work. The many contributors to our partial scholarship fund, the many contributors to our little projects in Kamsun South, I say thank you. All these persons know themselves, Madam Speaker. I say thank you to our supporters in Kamsun South, and to all the people of Kamsun South, because I have a very good rapport, Madam Speaker. Everybody knows that. I have a very good rapport with all my constituents. I don't care what color you are, Madam Speaker. I represent all the people of Kamsun South. And they come to me, even if they disagree with me, even they tell me that I know that they're not supporting me, but at least they stick with me. And I want to thank them for their support during the last 4 years. They've shown that we can disagree and yet be civil to each other. I have no problem with Kamsun South when it comes to people discussing things with me, whether they support me personally or not. But they support me as the parliamentarian. I want to say thank you to all of them. And I look forward to representing you in this house. The next time another budget will be called, I will be here representing you in Kamsun South. Madam Speaker, all the people of Kamsun South, they deserve my thanks for what they've done and how they supported me in the last 4 years. So I say thank you, and may God continue to bless the people of Kamsun South. Thank you very much.